What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm one of your hosts, King Kaz, joined as always by my good friend, the co-host, the one, the great, the extraordinary, Jivizy.
Too much. Not that good.
Look, jobs are on the line, and I'm just trying to show that I can handle mine in the booth.
Well, ESPN is hiring, apparently. Their Monday Night Football booth has been, I guess, a little bit lacking. I actually really like Joe Tessitore, but mostly just because I know him from boxing, universally panned, as DJM would say. And I don't really think it's Joe Tessitore's fault. He's a pretty decent play-by-play guy, but the last couple of years they had Jason Witten in the booth, who was so bad he actually just went back to playing football. And then Booger McFarland, who I guess before he was riding around on a cart, and then they brought him into the booth and he wasn't that much better. So they're looking to upgrade. And so the rumor is, after the big Tony Romo deal last week, ESPN wants to sign Peyton Manning. And they want to give him even more money than CBS gave Tony Romo. And then on top of that, to round out the booth, they want to bring in Al Michaels from NBC.
That doesn't seem like a bad pairing to me. That seems like a pairing that could work really well together.
Yeah, and Al Michaels is kind of one of those guys that can really just work with anybody, and he's been doing this for a long time and hasn't really lost a step. Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth is still like the premier NFL broadcast booth, because they're the ones that do the Sunday night NBC game, which is supposed to be the premier game of the week. He's been doing this back since, he paired with John Madden. He did Monday Night Football for a long time before that. He's just a pretty big name. And also DGM mentions that NBC brought in Mike Tirico from NBC, from ESPN several years ago, with the expectation that Mike Tirico would eventually take over, for Al Michaels, but Al Michaels is still going. NBC has options, but Michaels is still under contract right now. So Disney would have to give up something in order to get him to come over to ABC/ESPN, wherever they choose to do whatever games they broadcast. And which is interesting, because Al Michaels is at NBC now, after John Madden made the move to NBC, and NBC to acquire him gave up the intellectual property for Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, which, if you played the game Epic Mickey, he's one of the antagonists in that game. But it's weird that like an announcer got traded for intellectual property. At this point, I mean, it's not technically a trade. It's more like, in order to buy out his contract, that's what NBC Universal gave to Disney. But now Disney has to give up something. So I guess how much is Al Michaels worth to you? Like, what if you were Disney, what would you give up?
Yeah, see, that I don't know. I feel like Disney has so much money and power that they could almost maybe even just make a split deal. DuckTales.
DuckTales is pretty big. Like,
yeah.
That's a lot to give up. Obviously, like something less than the Avengers.
One for one deal. DuckTales for Al Michaels.
But then, like, there's so much integration with DuckTales and, like, other Disney properties. It has to be, like, something that's not that. And,
Johnny Tsunami.
Yeah, okay. Actually, Like it feels. Well,
what other sports like thing does? Does
oh yeah, I mean yeah, they could do any of those.
Boys, like I got it.
Sign in. What's up?
They can give up the rights to a television franchise that would go very well with Sunday Night Football and Carrie Underwood doing the opening theme song. Of course, I'm talking about Hannah Montana.
Ooh.
You could have Miley Cyrus one last time do Hannah Montana with Carrie Underwood doing the Sunday Night Football theme, and that would be the trade. Hannah Montana.
Okay. I don't know.
I was thinking you were going to say the wide world of sports. Give up like the library to
them. Oh, no. That's an untouchable. That's untouchable.
Okay. But Miley Cyrus is not. Okay.
So the only other thing here that I thought of, and this isn't the name ABC or NBC kind of thing, but I thought of, rather than going for Al Michaels, right? What if we go for a Manning booth with Peyton and Eli?
Well,
as your football commentators,
you still need a play by play guy.
I'm but sure maybe, one of them could possibly do it.
I mean that's a big risk. So the reason why all of this matters is that that the NFL's TV deals are they're all expiring soon.
Yeah.
So each network needs to make its case to the NFL for why they deserve to be paid, or why they deserve, I guess, why these networks deserve to pay the NFL for the premier spots.
What if this becomes more of, with that on the line, right? What if this becomes more of a thing where kind of it's a wink wink between ABC and NBC to be like, hey, we'll give you, you know, Al Michaels, but you don't step on our feet, we don't step on your feet, kind of thing, in going to line up these deals.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it could be, we give you Al Michaels and you don't bid for the Sunday night game slot. I think because they used to be swapped. Sunday night used to be ESPN, which was, you know, on cable TV, so it had lower viewership. And then Monday Night Football was on. I'm getting it wrong because Monday Night Football was on ABC for a long time. I think at some point there was a switch to ESPN for the Sunday night game, and with slightly decreased ratings, so they want the premier game, I think, on network TV, and not whether it's Sunday night or Monday night. It used to be Monday Night Football was the game everybody tuned into, and now it's kind of an afterthought. The league tries to market as the premier game, then it's they want the best broadcast booth there.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, no matter what, I'm still just going to watch Red Zone. So it doesn't matter who's in the booth, because I don't care.
That's the thing. There's only one game happening at that time, so
yeah,
Red Zone doesn't really apply. So it's... That's why it's the big game of the week, and we'll see. There's a lot of money to be thrown around here.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on from there. Let's talk about a little bit of basketball news. So we got our first head coach firing. The Nets have decided to part ways with Kenny Atkinson. Jaquie Vaughn will be taken over. Is there any
former NBA player Jacques Vaughn?
Jacques Vaughn. Is there any particular reason why? Was there any, like, you know, we want to go in a different direction, he's not in the future of this franchise kind of thing?
That's actually pretty close. except like some of that was actually initiated by Kenny Atkinson himself. He basically said he's lost the team, or I've lost the team, and it's kind of weird to have a head coach so vocally like announce that themselves. Usually it's other people saying, hey, you've lost control of the team, it's time to get rid of you. But yeah, in this case, it was the coach himself. So maybe this is somewhat of a mutual termination. Maybe we haven't had our first firing of the season. John Beilein of the Cavs was also John Beilein was also a mutual termination at the All-Star break. And I guess both of these splits have been at least somewhat, maybe if not amicable, at least cordial, and not so one-sided. But yeah, it's the Nets have struggled this year, which I think I don't want to say we knew coming in that they would struggle, but we knew that they're not at 100%. Kevin Durant's out all season. Kyrie Irving has been dealing with injury problems, and he's also just been Kyrie Irving. So that's on its own, a lot to handle. The Nets have struggled a bit. They've had some really bad losses recently. And apparently some of this is centered around Kenny Atkinson bringing DeAndre Jordan off the bench, which don't think is a bad decision. I think Atkinson is probably going to be one of those coaches that gets snapped up pretty quickly, maybe in the off season, maybe immediately, probably not immediately, but in the off season, I think he's probably getting another job, and he'll get a chance to try somewhere else. But it's kind of, you know, the Nets had high hopes, and so now they're going to have to bring in somebody else to carry that through. And after their big off season last year. And I think next year might end up being do or die. You've got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant back. You're supposedly at full strength. And if they can't do anything with that, then
it looks bad.
It looks really bad, because they had a good thing going with D'Angelo Russell and the spunky Nets up and coming team that they had. And, now transitioning into what they're hoping is going to be some sort of juggernaut. It's not looking like it's working out. But they're still doing better than the other team in New York.
Let's talk about it. So the Knicks decided to keep hiring people to woe their problems. Why spend money on basketball players when you can keep spending it on your front office?
Well, Leon Rose is a pretty respected agent around the league. Mm-hmm. So I think they're taking the same approach that the Lakers took when they hired Rob Pelinka, hoping that having an agent with all the connections that come with being an agent, especially a pretty well-known agent like Leon Rose, maybe that can help attract players, maybe some of the players that used to be clients of Leon Rose. That on its own, not so bad of a move. They won their first game with Leon Rose as the general manager, even though he doesn't really control any of that. But
JVZ, I have a question about something currently in the NBA. You brought up Rob Pelinka and now Leon Rose. Something that I've never seen a clear answer on. If you are a front office person for an NBA team while also still being an agent, is that not a massive conflict of interest? I'm wondering how this still goes on.
I believe they are no longer agents at this point once they get hired.
Okay.
Because you're right, it is a massive conflict of interest. I don't believe they are agents anymore. The one time this has worked is with Bob Myers and the Golden State Warriors, and it worked in tremendous fashion there. So I think Pelinka was kind of to try to emulate that. Although he was supposed to be Magic Johnson's assistant, and we all know how that works.
Let's all laugh at Magic Johnson.
Yeah, I think the Knicks still think that they are a premier destination. They play in a destination city, and so they want a guy that can supposedly help bring superstars to New York, which is like the exact opposite of what you Cavs have been saying they should do. Like this entire time, like you got to build from the ground up. You got to bring in, you got to draft well, you got to bring in good picks, and you got to show that you are worthy of people coming over. You got to do what the Nets did. If you want to go the superstar route.
You have to make the effort to show your fans, the people who are willing to spend money to come to these games, that you are trying to win no matter what. Just buying the big names isn't enough anymore, right? Because everyone is doing that. It's becoming essential to have that good young talent, right? To show that you're willing to grow, to show that you're willing to put in effort. And with that being said, about, you know, showing the people who are willing to spend money on your games, the Knicks have decided to start kicking those people out of their games. Very namely, Spike Lee has come into a bit of woe with the Knicks organization, so much so that he has decided to, at this point, stop being a Knicks fan, which...
Or at least stop attending games. There was a bit of a feud. That same game, that first Leon Rose game that they won, Spike Lee was notoriously absent for the first half, which usually does not happen. He's there in his courtside seat one of the more famous NBA fans, specifically, or partly because he's also gotten involved at times. And this time he was, he claims he was going through the same entrance that he always goes through every single game, and his ticket was scanned like normal. And then after it was scanned, somebody tried to tell him that he couldn't go through that entrance. It technically is the employee entrance. But after his ticket was scanned, somebody told him he needed to leave the building and then come back in through another entrance, which anybody who goes to games knows that you are not allowed to come back in after you leave. They can't scan your ticket twice.
Yeah.
So instead of kind of like it would have died there if somebody said, hey, you can't use that entrance from now on. Like, let us, like, we'll take you to your seat this time, but next time, like, just please use a different entrance.
Yeah.
Apparently they have like a different celebrity entrance too. So.
Especially for somebody like Spike Lee, who is I think most teams, like LA is very known for having Jack Nicholson at their games. The Toronto, when they're doing well, has Drake at their games. And so it's kind of a notable factor that certain teams are very synonymous with certain celebrity folk. Right. And Spike Lee has been a Knicks fan as long as I can remember being a Knicks fan.
He's been there forever, like since the 70s or 80s. Like he's...
So it's probably one of these things where I'm sure everyone knows who Spike Lee is, you know, coming to these games. And like, yeah, I you know what, for certain factors, okay, you're like, hey, we know who you are. And I think, like you said, you go... cool, but from now on, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, just for us, just for our whatever, blah, 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 blah.
Well, like the Kings would do that for me, and I'm not even a celebrity. Like the, just the fact, like I'm a season ticket holder. I pay $1,000 a year to come to all these games, and these are trash basketball games, and I still pay that money. So it's like, at least as like, thank you, like work with me a little bit when I do something a little bit off. Like every game I get stopped at security and told that I can't bring in my iPad, which I bring for the train ride, not for the game. and but those are allowed. And so, like, I asked them, like, hey, like, I come to every game, like, can you check with security? And yeah, they do that instead of just kicking me out and saying, like, you know, like, yeah, we know the rules and et cetera, even though I am correct on that. But they work with me. And, yeah, you know, just at least a willingness to work with me on that. You got to have that willingness for the guy who pays more money than anybody else to come to these games. The guy who has done that for, you know, 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and the guy who has the clout, the reach to go on ESPN's First Take show in the morning and blast you if you don't treat them correctly, or not even correctly, but just like with a modicum of respect. Eventually he did make it to his seat. I think after, according to him, like, there were other people that had their tickets scanned with him as well. And they were in the elevator with him when he was pulled out of the elevator and told that he couldn't proceed forward. And then after more arguing, they eventually let him get to his seat. And then James Dolan walked over and talked to him, and then they shook hands, and there is a supposedly staged photo from, like, way up in the, taken from way up in the rafters of them shaking hands. And then so when Spike Lee went on First Take the next day to complain about this, the Knicks released a counter statement firing back, which was,
you never do that. Never,
well, ever. Yeah. So then, A, don't do that. And then the wording of the statement was also very, very petty. And then so that after that happened, Lee went back on the radio in the afternoon and fired back even harder. And so it's a bad look when your most famous fan decides I've had enough. So this is after all the people getting kicked out for the sell the team chance. This is after Charles Oakley getting kicked out last year. This is, you know, like all the, even Reggie Miller came out and backed Spike Lee. And then those two notoriously did not get along for a bit. Like all these old Knicks players like Stephon Marbury are coming out in support of Spike Lee and against James Dolan. So
And I just think we're in a situation where, like, no matter what, right, no matter what, I love this team, right? I grew up watching the Knicks. I love this team. And very weirdly enough, there's like another fandom thing that I have in K-pop where it's like, I like K-pop, but you know, there comes a point where you don't want to support or even like think about the industry that it is. And I'm getting there with the Knicks. It's like, I love the team. I love the memories that I have and all that stuff, but goddamn, I don't want to deal with this ownership or front office. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be associated with that in any way, shape, or form if I can. Like,
yeah. So you're Knicks free, like DJM is Lions free.
Yeah, like I'm still gonna be a Knicks fan. I'm still gonna always hope that they do the right thing, but I know that they're not. You know what I mean? Like, I know there's no way that they're ever going to do anything that at the end of the day will truly make me happy, because no matter what, they'll always be the Knicks and they'll always find a way to fuck it up.
DJM was suggesting that we plug the Patreon to get you enough money to afford front row seats once they get cheap enough that nobody else wants them. But it sounds like you're not willing to participate in that.
Because I can't. I just, they're too problematic. It's too much of an issue.
All right. More head coaching news, I guess. Greg Popovich had to miss a game for personal reasons, and Tim Duncan got to coach his first game, which everybody was very excited about. But also, I think a couple people, DJM included, raised the issue of why didn't Becky Hammon get to do this? Because, I mean, she's been supposedly the heir apparent for a while now. She has been the after Popovich has been ejected from a couple games, she took over. And apparently the rule for the Spurs is that whoever scouted the opposing team is the one who gets to be the substitute head coach whenever Popovich is not around. So so that's why. But yeah, I feel like the Spurs did kind of miss an opportunity there to have, you know, Becky Hammon be the first woman to coach a game from start to finish.
Hey guys, can I say something that might be controversial?
Go for it. That's what this is about.
I think that on the topic of Becky Hammon, I think that it's been made pretty clear to me that the Becky Hammon narrative is kind of smoke and mirrors. I don't think we'll ever really get the opportunity to see if she can be an NBA coach. I'm starting to believe more and more that it's just not going to happen. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of narrative. There's a lot of banter about Becky Hammon as an NBA coach. But I think that this story with Tim Duncan, it's really kind of pushed me in the other direction to say I don't see her getting much of an opportunity in the future. I just don't see it happening anymore.
Being one of the more cynical fans, like I would also lean towards, like, I don't think teams are going to lean towards giving her a chance, but I feel like the landscape on that is shifting a little bit, because before Becky Hammon was just the first coach, and now there's so many teams with female coaches now. So it's not like it's almost like that's not a big deal anymore. And at some point, she's had interviews as well. This might turn out to be the case where, like, it seemed like Ettore Messina was Popovich's old longtime assistant. It seemed like he was the heir apparent to either to Popovich's job or to he was going to get a job somewhere in the NBA because it seemed like he was a candidate for every coaching position, and then nobody ever hired him.
Right, and no one ever hired him. So I'm wondering, in the case of Becky Hammon, I hate to do this, but I'm getting the vibe from the NFL in regards to the Rooney Rule. And I'm wondering that now, is Becky Hammon that token interview for a vacant head coaching position, to where now teams can say, yeah, we interviewed Becky Hammon. We're not going to hire her, but we definitely interviewed her. That's how I see things going now. I don't see her actually getting a job.
I would hope not. And I would hope that, that at least one team out there is willing to, I hesitate to call it, you know, taking a risk, because I think from all the talk about Becky Hammon, like, a lot of the talk is still that she is a very good coach. And that's, you know, that's coming from players who used to play with the Spurs, players who currently play with the Spurs, players who played on her championship winning summer league team. There's rave reviews. So eventually I want to believe that eventually she will get an opportunity. I'm not there yet where you are.
I think if anything, and you know, this is the bad way. I think if anything, somebody takes a chance on the clout factor. And then what has to happen is she has to do well. She has to do like really, really well. If somebody takes an opportunity on the clout factor just to do it so that they can say that they did it. And then if she shows out, I think then you have the thing, right? Because she, I think,
and no, that's a rough what, situation can, for, yeah, to get put in, because, you know, sometimes it's if the decision,
but then it's
is
the same thing
clout,
with it's, yeah, the it's, same thing with minority coaches in the NFL. If they, mm-hmm, don't succeed within 2 years, they're gone, and
yeah, yeah, and they're not allowed those, the room to fail, and
then there are those whispers of whether they can do it or not at this level, where they can be a head coach. Eric Bieniemy, mm-hmm, for an example. I feel like that is something that Becky Hammon isn't going to overcome in the NBA, and I don't see the NBA overcoming this anytime soon. I'm convinced that this thing with Tim Duncan seemed like a very serious snub. We'll probably hear about her maybe getting interviews in the off season, but that's it. That's all I'm seeing.
Yeah,
I also
could be. I mean, I don't want to turn it into that just because they're. It does seem like the Spurs have, you know, have stuck to that that rule of how they choose coaches, and Hammond has coached games in the past, but, you know, just partial games. So it's, yeah, it's tough. I don't want to, yeah, I don't want to read too much into this, but yeah, I do feel like it was like a missed opportunity to make history, and maybe because of that, maybe it is saying a little bit more than what's on the surface, but I hope not. At least I hope not when it comes to the Spurs, because generally they are one of those organizations that tries to do things right. In a way, like they've had success because they've been such a professional organization for such a long time.
I don't know.
And I hope that when, if Hammond does get a job somewhere, it's not with the Knicks and or the Kings, or like it'll be with an organization that is willing to put the support around her that that any coach would need to succeed, and she's not just set up to be a token failure.
I hope so as well. I just want to see more people get more opportunities, and, you know, not just based on the clout factor, because the big thing for me with her is she seems like she's already gained the player support, and that's, I think, the harder thing to do in general.
Yeah,
because there are male coaches who can't get that, right? There are guys who don't have the player support.
Yeah, or coaches that come out of college that nobody in the NBA knows, and
yeah,
so they have trouble developing those relationships. Yeah.
And I mean, we've seen a lot of guys come from the college into the NBA and just not been able to, you know, gain the clout of the NBA, you know, caliber talent, right? Just because they're not all that good. So I think everybody should at least be given an opportunity. Just, you know, like you give somebody 2 or 3 years. Like I hate that factor of like the one and done kind of thing. Like DJM said, like you have this one opportunity and you got to do it. Like, I feel like, especially in competitive sports, you need like a year or two to really actually build out a team, and you need the full support to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So hopefully, going into the future, she's allowed to do that. All right, let's talk about the XFL. Yeah. I still have not been watching, but I know you boys have. So what's going on with the XFL?
Just a quick look at the standings. The Houston Roughnecks are still undefeated in the Western Conference. Them and the Dallas Renegades are at the top of the West, and so top two teams in each division make the playoffs. This is after we're in the middle of week 5, so I think there's going to be 8 weeks.
Okay.
And then in the Eastern Conference, the Battlehawks, the St. Louis Battlehawks are 3-1 at the top, and the New York Guardians are 3-2 in second place. So the Battlehawks are playing today. That's one of our stories. The The Battlehawks attendance this year has been spectacular. We talked about Seattle, I think, last time.
Yeah.
And they've got kind of a chip on their shoulder after the after their basketball team was taken away. But St. Louis has had their football team taken away. So they are there. There's basically a bunch of football fans that are not only looking for a team to support, but looking to prove that they deserved to have the St. Louis Rams stay in St. Louis to begin with. And that move by the Rams to LA was a no-no. It was a shitty move that screwed over the city of St. Louis and all their rabid fans. So, I mean, they had 29,000 people show up for the first game, 27,000 the second game. These are massive numbers. And these are numbers that are higher than some NFL games this season. So, on top of that, like this weird, the fandom group has seemed to solidify, you know, like every fan group kind of has their own weird memes and weird chants. And so now this weird caw battle cry has formed with the Battlehawks. And so it's like, not only do you have the people actually paying to come to the games, but you have fan group, fan lore developing among your fan base. So in the early days of the XFL, as they figure out like what cities are being successful and not, I feel like Seattle and St. Louis have definitely left their mark on the XFL so far. We brought up Houston. They've been at least the most successful on the field.
Yeah.
So far, PJ Walker is definitely making the case for an NFL contract at some point. I also read somewhere that Seattle, the Seattle Seahawks are looking to bring him in as potentially a backup for Russell Wilson. And so that would be a good opportunity for him as well. I think we have our first big XFL scandal now. The Roughnecks won their game against the Seattle Dragons 32-23, which is a 9-point difference. But that game ended on a kneel down on the 22-yard line with 2 seconds left on the clock. That was the Roughnecks' own 22-yard line on fourth down. So that should have been a turnover on downs. The refs let the... It should have been a turnover on downs, and the clock should have stopped with 2 seconds left. The refs let the clock expire. Is that correct, EJM? I believe you watched this game. The refs kind of just let the clock expire.
At the very end of the game, the Houston Roughnecks were in victory formation. PJ Walker nailed down. But they even went to his coach. They went to the head coach, June Jones, and he made the point of saying, I wanted to make sure that they were running out the clock and they didn't have 3 seconds left. Because in the XFL, it's a 25-second play clock. And it looked as though that when the clock ran out with the play clock, there were still 2 or 3 seconds left on the actual game clock, where it was supposed to be a turnover on downs. But the referees declared the game to be over, and they even brought it up in the post game on commentary that was a bad look. It was a bad look on the part of the officials of the game. Everyone was still there. There was technically still time, and the game was not over. And in the XFL, you have the opportunity to score a touchdown, and then you have the option to do a 1, 2, or 3-point conversion. So theoretically, the Seattle Dragons could have gotten the ball back, scored, and gotten an untimed conversion after the touchdown, should they score and then tie the game and go into overtime. But that didn't happen.
This was not like a Hail Mary opportunity. This was on the opponent's 22-yard line.
Yes. So this was a legit potential scoring opportunity for the Seattle Dragons. But the officials ended the game and didn't give it to them.
And the XFL had to issue an apology after the game for that error. They acknowledged everything. They fucked up. But all they have to offer at this point is sincere regrets, and they've reassigned the officiating supervisor that was in charge of the game. So,
oops.
Yeah, big oops. But not the first time a sports league has made a big oops. Hopefully they'll recover from this. I guess it's not that big a deal. But
because it's the XFL and it is their first season back, and it's the XFL, this will have a spotlight on it. This will be a bad look, and it's not exactly a good look for them at all.
And the Seattle Dragons are 1-4. They're probably, with that record, they're probably not going to make the playoffs, but maybe they still have a chance because, the team in the number two spot only has 2 wins. So right now, so it could be, this could end up costing them.
But
do you think Houston didn't really need this win either.
So on the part of the XFL though, do you think this is one of those things where, because they were so readily to admit it and save face, I guess. I don't really want to say they saved face, but save face. Does that make it better for you?
It helps with me personally, but I mm-hmm. like the NBA does this thing where with the last 2 minutes of every game where they go through and they report on how well the officiating did. And what they report on every single call, whether they got it right or not. And the refs hate this because they feel like they're being independently called out by their boss. And the refs kind of do their own internal vetting and they claim to handle that in-house.
With the XFL, the referees are mic'd, the reviewing officials in the booths are mic'd.
Yeah.
And like the NFL, they can go to their headquarters to get judgment calls and decisions and what have you. And like the NFL, they have an officiating expert, the XFL, there with the broadcast for the games. So this is significantly more transparent than other sports leagues right now. And in real time. So I think that the XFL is being... I think we can credit the XFL for being as transparent as they have been. I think that's a positive because they weren't trying to cover it up. They know that this was a large error, and they've been completely transparent about it from when it happened to after the game and going forward.
Yeah. So the point I was trying to make about the NBA last 2 minute reports is that those come out the next morning, and every time they come out and a fan base sees that they were screwed over, all they have is the right to get mad. That's it. That's all they have. And it doesn't fix anything. And the NFL does this too. Sometimes they sometimes acknowledge bad calls, and sometimes I see the fan sentiment of what is the point of this? Announcing all this doesn't fix anything. It just makes us feel angrier that we were screwed over. I would rather that they admit that they were wrong than to have them just pretend like everything is fine. When you do that, that's when you get FIFA. The real FIFA, not the game, but that's how you get how soccer refs are, where there's this weird there's this weird mindset that like the ref is God on the field and you have to respect them, and yet they don't get the, you know, like they don't get to, before video replay, the argument was that that technology like that would undermine the authority of the referee, but you know, but then the referees get these calls wrong and they're shown on the replay, and you know, and they've undermined their own authority by making these bad calls that everybody knows are bad, but you still have to treat them like God. The XFL is not trying to act like God here, and I think that helps. Like they try to do the best they can as humans, and in this case, they fucked up. But you know, like everybody knows they fucked up. They're gonna, you know, hopefully this doesn't happen again, and so I think it's easier for everybody to move on from this.
Yeah,
especially since the league is young, especially since viewership isn't that high yet. So
you have room for mistakes.
Yeah. One guy who's not going to move on after his mistake is Giuseppe Guastella, who in this case, this is a video game that fucked up. I mean, obviously there's bugs that occur in video games. Like what we've talked about esports a lot, and occasionally there's bugs that have an effect on the game. This was a very egregious one though. Guastella was shooting a penalty shot in the FIFA 20 North American qualifier for the FIFA Ultimate Team Champions Cup. The final penalty shot of the game, the ball rebounded off the goalpost, hit the goalkeeper, and went in, which is I believe a good goal. And replays clearly show that it went in. But for some reason, the game bugged and declared that it wasn't a goal. So even though like all the replays and all that showed it, the tournament organizers just went with the game's initial ruling, which
is weird.
That's like
We both are somewhat fans of esports, and I don't know the way generally it's handled in fighting games, but I know in some things they'll usually go back, or they'll just kind of be like, you know, this is kind of a known, well, not known, but they'll be like, you know, that's kind of a miscue. League has in the past done some of that. I've seen some other competitive League actually games.
Has the ability to, I think they can like rewind back to the point where the issue happened for the a lot of times. And
to, there was to a certain issue, extent,
a couple of years ago where a game couldn't do that. And so they had to declare one of the teams the winner because they had such a massive lead. At the very least there's, like if something happens and the game is close, you do a replay. Mm-hmm. And
I've also seen some kind of notable things in Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike kind of has some known issues of like you're aiming at a guy, you hit a guy, but the game doesn't register it, and you just kind of got to keep living your life.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how that goes. But I think in this kind of situation, I think you kind of have to give it to him, right? Like
at the very least, a replay. Replay this game because of this glitchy ending, and it's an obvious bug in the game. Mm-hmm. So like I don't think you can, Guastella has every right to feel aggrieved, and I think this is a bad look for the tournament organizers to have just blindly stuck with game glitched, but the game is the game, the game is the rule, the game is God. So this thing is supposed to happen less in video games because DGM asked, was it too much to ask to just do a rematch? And apparently so. That's the minimum that they should have done for this.
We're not. DJM, what is like the closest thing to this in fighting games, right? What's like a kind of weird notable bug that like would bring a game to a halt and like
As far as bugs go, there aren't specifically bugs or glitches, because generally if a game has that, it's usually just seen as something to adapt to or to something to work around. Mm-hmm. And game developers are pretty good about balancing characters out in fighting games. But if there is a serious glitch in a game, I've seen almost every time that the players will agree, especially if it's like a deciding round or a deciding match, that if it's really necessary, they will play it again. They'll play that one again. And no character changes, no changes, but they'll just run that match again.
Yeah. I mean, that could have easily been done here. FIFA games don't take that long. And and this was for a tournament qualifier. So
yeah,
I mean, Guastella is I guess one of the best players in the U.S. He's playing for the esports branch of the LA Galaxy. Like, this is, I mean, and all of that's kind of irrelevant. Like, this was an obvious goal. So, like, it's weird that this is. I mean, the story should have been like the bug happened. Hey, like even refs in video games suck sometimes, like, but we fixed it because we had a video replay. Like, this is one of the rare cases where, like, if this happened in real life, VAR would have corrected this and it would have fixed it in real life, but not in the video game where the refereeing is supposed to be perfect or is programmed to be perfect, even if the programming is somewhat imperfect. Like, they don't program the referees in the game to have wheel room on calls. Like, it is
what it is.
Yeah. Like, so this shouldn't happen. And when there's obvious, clear visual evidence that a call on the field, on the digital field in this case, was wrong, the rational human beings in charge of this process should have rationally decided that, I mean, they should have decided that
15-minute sudden death match.
Yeah, they could do that. They could, I mean, yeah, these guys aren't, like, they're digital players. They're not tired. It's, we could just do this again. Or just award the goal to the player who very obviously scored the goal. So it's, I don't think the other player in this case would have felt aggrieved had that ruling come down in the opposite way.
Mm-hmm. You can try. You'd be like, I got robbed, man. They shouldn't have gave him that. The game didn't give him that. They shouldn't have gave him that.
Yeah.
But no, I think you're right. I think in all things, I think you replay it, man. Like, or just give him the goal. If you know it's a goal, if you can see it's a goal, if it's clearly a goal, but the game is fucking up, just give him the goal. That's why you have people there. Like, God. All right.
This is also why with fighting game tournaments, along with the games recording the rounds, they actually have human officials recording them, writing them down as well. In case something like this happens.
Yeah. Right. I mean, this is, like, people take edge cases like these as an argument against having robots, but, like, this is a reason to have a human involved as a check. Like, this is why when they're talking about using robot umps for balls and strikes, they're going to have a human there to verify that, oh, maybe this was, even though the ball bounced off the ground and landed in the strike zone and the robot called it a strike, it bounced off the ground, therefore it's a ball. And, you know, like, it's a human sanity check. And in this case, these tournament organizers failed the sanity check, failed the Turing test.
It's dumb. It's dumb, right. And everyone involved is dumb.
Okay. Not the guy who scored the goal.
No, not the guy who scored the goal. He's fine.
All right. Moving on to baseball. Another scandal.
Yeah, here we go.
All right. In this case, I would call this treason. The Brian Bubba Harkins was a opposing clubhouse manager for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. He's been working there since 1981, started as a bat boy and moved his way up. But he has been fired by the Angels because he sold like substances that you can put on the ball to increase the grip. He sold those to the opposing teams. It's not like he was even helping the Angels cheat. He was helping the other teams cheat. And okay. And so it's one thing that was interesting about the story is that I learned that MLB actually puts their own substance on the ball called New Jersey Mud. And so like that's what they put on the ball. That's what the officials put on the balls. But players are not allowed to put anything else on there. But like there's various mixes of things you could do to make the balls a little bit stickier and have a better grip. And apparently this is widespread. You could do stuff with pine tar, sunscreen.
Yeah.
Like all these things that you can put on there are like readily available. So it's hard to test for everything. Apparently Harkins was selling a substance called go-go juice. Like all these names sound like drugs. At this point, it's bad enough if the players are doing it. But I think
this is another example more of getting caught rather than actually committing the crime.
It's one thing if he's getting caught supplying that to the Angels, to his employer, the team he works for, but no, he's doing that for the other team.
And here's where I feel that this is less about the actual crime. One, I'm certain that every Major League Baseball team and every Major League Baseball park has an equipment manager that is doing this. I'm also certain that the home team's equipment managers and what have you are doing this. So I'm assuming that this is a matter of, quote, cheating, unquote, on all sides. So I imagine that baseball as a whole probably saw this as a sort of a gentleman's agreement of cheating on all sides until this gentleman got himself caught. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've said that they're trying to crack down on this, which when baseball says they're trying to crack down on something, I don't know how much you believe them, but they claim that, but in this case, like to sell out your employer for, he had to either be really greedy or really pissed off, to supply all this to the other team.
I could see it.
Also, I blame him for, Mike Trout would be even better if opposing pitchers didn't have the substance to work with against him. So I blame this guy.
Actually, I think that's kind of cool. I actually think that's kind of cool. It's hindering Mike Trout's unlimited power level, and I'm okay with that.
Okay. Well, okay. If they expand the playoffs, we might get to see Mike Trout in the playoffs this year, and he won't be hindered by a fellow team employee selling out the other team. So expect big things from Mike Trout this year.
And Shohei Ohtani.
Not like Mike Trout hasn't already been doing big things.
I think he's a great guy. I just think the more and more we get about how bad the him and Shohei Ohtani, I give due respect to both. But I just love the more and more we find out that the MLB is just as corrupt as it has always been. Like, each and every year. I think somehow, some way, we have also circled back around to them.
Guys, hot take time.
Hot take time. What's up?
Kaz, you first. It's okay. More corrupt. Major League Baseball or FIFA?
Sure. Jesus, FIFA, 100%.
Easy?
Yeah. No, I totally agree, 100%.
All right. Okay, go ahead.
Because it trickles down from FIFA to all the various governing bodies, the various continental governing bodies as well. Like at least in the U.S. where we have a free press, the organizations in the U.S. have to at least try. Maybe a somewhat free press, but like they have to at least try.
Are they trying with the minor league teams?
No, but there's just less visibility there. When it comes to small soccer in other countries, and I'm not necessarily talking about like the big ones like Italy and Spain and England, although there are plenty of controversies there too. But in some other countries in the quote unquote third world, soccer becomes a vehicle for political corruption as well as just sports corruption. So there's a ton of money being exchanging hands for nefarious reasons, and it's just another level of corruption. Baseball is rough, and sometimes the roughness can be chalked up to this is just kind of how we used to do it and nobody ever cared about this before. And I think something like this falls under that. The sign stealing stuff doesn't fall under that. But I would say baseball is more incompetent than corrupt, whereas FIFA is straight up corrupt.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The FBI hasn't arrested anybody in the Major baseball front office. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah. Or that we know of. Maybe they've kept it on the hush.
Well, I mean,
we'll
there
keep
was
an eye on
in the early
We'll
days.
Keep an eye on the Astros.
It's yeah.
That's the other thing I was going to say. I don't know how, but we've circled back around to me reading stories about the MLB having to maybe self-regulate because people aren't spending money again. Like, they're like, we know you have money. Why are you not paying people? Like, and it's just a consistent cycle of the same bullshit over and over and over again with the MLB is the problem. Like, at least FIFA has the audacity to do something different every once in a while, and like somebody stealing money, you know, from FIFA, somebody's doing this, somebody's doing that. Like, there's at least like a smattering of different things going on. Like baseball, it's the same shit. Like people are just doing the same shit over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, DJ just made a good quote. Baseball just wants to be 100 years old forever.
Yeah.
And FIFA is willing to change if you pay them to change.
Who else is willing to change? We are. I don't know what that means, but you'll find out. Thank you for joining us on this episode. DJM's not willing to change. He's going to be much like baseball and be the same for the next 100 years. Make sure you tell a friend about the show. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at King Cash. GVZ's at GVZ. DJM is call me DJM. You can follow the show on Twitter as well. I'm going to start trying to update that a little bit more. Sports Odds and Ends. Go on over to the Patreon. If you like the show enough and you want to show us a little bit of support, that would be definitely greatly appreciate it. Patreon.com/sportsodds and ends. Other than that, check out the stories that we covered this week. Keep on being awesome and keep on rooting for your teams if they're not the Lions, the Kings, or the Knicks, or the Giants.